welcome to another edition of Gillespie. I am your host, Josh Gillespie, here on FTRradio.com. Hey, thanks for tuning in tonight. We're going to have a really good show for you tonight. We're going to be talking with Christy Kelly about social media and politics, and then we're going to be having a very special pre-CPAC version of Ask a Rhino. Yes, Ask a Rhino finally returns to Gillespie. I know it's been a couple weeks, but we're bringing this segment back this week. We have a special, like I said, pre-CPAC edition. We'll be talking with Dina Farioli, John Brodick, and Mark Warner, all names you are used to hearing here on Gillespie, and specifically Ask a Rhino. It's going to be a good one. They're all going to be at CPAC. We're all going to be covering it. It's going to be a good time. So, frankly, you could call this the pre-CPAC Gillespie if you wanted to. But, in a way, as we move on with the rest of the show, I'm going to be talking a little bit about some Rhino territory of my own. We're going to be talking about the truce. That's right. As you probably know it, it was the truce heard around the world. At least the conservative world, that is. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' proclamation in an incredibly insightful Weekly Standard profile that as a potential presidential candidate, he would declare a so-called truce in the war over social issues while our nation faces a potential fiscal calamity. Well, you would have thought that my man Mitch had just proclaimed Margaret Sanger Day in the state of Indiana and all across the United States after the uproar his comments received from many in the social conservative movement. A considerable amount of wailing and gnashing of teeth could be heard from all over the pro-life movement in response. Former Arkansas Governor Mike the Huckster Huckabee put down his bass guitar just long enough to breathlessly proclaim that Daniels was using the issue of life and traditional marriage as bargaining chips. In the same breath, the Family Research Council's Tony Perkins said the truce was nothing more than surrender. After I stopped chuckling at all the phony angst amongst both potential White House challengers and their one-issue supporters, there was one clear issue that was so laughably obvious, I'm still stunned that very few people picked up on this. Simply put, Mitch Daniels is as pro-life as any other social conservative out there. Yes, I said it. Mitch Daniels is just as pro-life as Mike Huckabee, Tony Perkins, Sarah Palin, and any other leading social conservative out there. While he's not going to do his pander to specific one-issue groups, who are each playing their own personal games of musical presidential candidates while ignoring the music that's actually playing. The facts are that Governor Daniels, arguably the best governor in modern history of Indiana, is a member and is currently an elder at Tabernacle Presbyterian Church, an inner-city congregation that he's attended for almost 50 years. He and his wife, Sherry, helped found an inner-city Christian private school in downtown Indianapolis called the Oaks Academy. But the last person Mitch Daniels needs to defend his social conservative credentials is little old me. However, Kurt Smith, head of the Indiana Family Institute, has known Governor Daniels for nearly 30 years. He's been quoted as saying, quote, "He has a deep faith. He's totally pro-life, and he walks the talk." And in an acute situation like the one we're in now, with the dead, he might actually get away with a truce for a year or two. But to be successful in office, he's going to have to show those folks he shares their vision. There goes that vision thing again. Because the other key part of this discussion is the point that Governor Daniels was trying to make is completely right. There will be no pro-life movement, no babies to save, and no United States of America if we don't get our fiscal house in order. Now, none of these other issues will matter much if we don't clean up our balance sheet and right our fiscal ship. This nation will either completely collapse in bankruptcy or be a wholly owned colony of the People's Republic of China unless someone has the courage to put a stop to this insanity. You know who has the courage to take such a stance? My man Mitch does. And unlike either the former governors of Alaska or Arkansas, he has the record to back up his talk. I might still be personally undecided when it comes to my personal pick for president. Hey, it's early. But there's no doubt in my mind that the governor I've had the privilege of watching up close for the past 6 years is on my short list. And none of the presidential candidates, announced or otherwise, is more proudly pro-life than I am. Well, thank you for sticking around so far to Gillespie. We're going to have more coming up. Up next, we're going to be talking with Christy Kelly about social media and politics. It's going to be a fun conversation, because let's be honest, again, like I said earlier, without social media and politics, hey, this show wouldn't exist. Hey, stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. We'll be right back.
FTR Radio is From the Right Radio, online at FTRradio.com.
Hey Gillespie fans, this is Fingers Tiberius Molloy. Listen to The Snark Factor with Fingers Molloy every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time only on FTR Radio. And check out my website, fingersmolloy.com.
FTRradio.com. With me this segment is Christy Kelly. Christy, how you doing?
Hey, Josh, I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. In the monologue, I mentioned that we were going to be talking about politics and social media. And this is the reason we bring this up is because of an article from a website and a periodical called The New Atlantis that really discusses a recent study that was done looking at Facebook and its relationship to how it is going to shape the political landscape in the years to come, thanks to the generation that apparently is going to save us all, the millennials.
The millennials.
And frankly, I had to laugh, considering that my niece and nephews are millennials, and I can't look at them and think that they're going to be saving us anytime soon. Don't get me wrong. I love
that's
my niece
and scary.
My
I think that's why we're discussing education so much. It's like that is so scary.
But here's a funny thing. This particular study, and I want to make sure that I get this right, was done by Morley Winograd and Michael Heiss, who wrote the book Millennial Makeover. And it heralds social networking technology as a revolutionary mode of communication that will give voice to the unique views and beliefs of the next generation of American voters, the millennials. And apparently these millennials, they are so concerned about political discourse that they are quick to join groups like flipping my pillow to the side that is the coolest. And there was another one that I thought was pretty funny. Which
a million against Hillary.
A million against Bush, George W. Bush, yes. Mm-hmm. It amused me. It amused me. But at the same time, there's a part of me that wants to see the value in this study that these people did, even though, frankly, I think their conclusions are poppycock.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of one of the things that they did say was that this generation will finally, through social media, be able to thwart social conservatism and bring about economic equality.
Oh,
because of Facebook.
Thank you, Zuckerface, whatever your name is.
Oh, yes. And they contribute this to Barney because these Barney millennials were brought up in the community-minded, the generous spirit, community-minded spirit of the purple dinosaur, Barney.
Do you happen to recall, and this happens to be a very famous Saturday Night Live skit at this point, but this was during the 90s when Sir Charles Barkley was hosting Saturday Night Live, and one of his skits was where he played basketball with Barney and ended up actually just beating the living tar out of him. That is one of the most popular skits in Saturday Night Live history. And it is one of my personal favorite. And frankly, when I saw them attributing Barney to the political discourse that Barney opened the door for things like Facebook and the rainbows of the world so that millennials can share and commune. Apparently sharing and communing music and other things that really have no effect on their lives or political discourse at all. But I mean, here's the thing that I have to say, where I think that these people are missing the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. In that I think that Facebook and Twitter and YouTube can shape political discourse, but it will probably only shape it for those who are already involved in political discourse. You know, I think it's one of my favorite things that I want to get involved in more is, you know, being able to create and present YouTube videos that will clearly and concisely explain not only where I what I believe, but also what other people happen to believe, whether it's for elected officials or candidates or whatnot. I mean, here's the thing. Barack Obama, to his credit, mind you, there are very few things that I will give positive credit to Barack Obama. But I loved his social media campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it necessarily changed the election for him, that it was the single most thing that probably won him the campaign. I just think it was because he was running against John McCain and that he had to run against, that he was able to run against George W. Bush. But social media was such a profound impact on his campaign that it brought in so many people. Now, those people he brought in have apparently have summarily left because they could care less anymore. They were just excited. One of my favorite things from The Onion. I don't know if you ever check out The Onion News Network.
Yes.
It was they did shortly after the President Obama was inaugurated. They did a kind of a follow up on obviously a parody, but I mean they did a follow up on all the Obamacons, and it's like, what are they doing now? And all these people just like zombies walking up to people, slapping stickers on them, saying change we can believe in. You know, just not knowing really what to do anymore because, well, Obama's won, so what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm. What change is it that they're wanting? You know, that this age group. I mean, clearly we know what Morley Winograd and Michael Hayes are looking forward to.
Yeah.
They're still stuck in the 60s. And they believe that the millennials are the ones. They're like the millennials are their great messiah that's going to finally fulfill this vision that they had. And I think, you know, of course, the article is written by Sebastian Weissman titled "We Are the Change We've Been Waiting For." And
and that's definitely a play off something, I believe, the line from President Obama's inauguration speech, where
yes.
something like, I forget what he said, but that's basically a play off of that.
We are the change we've been waiting for.
Yes.
And, you know, he scoffs at what he sees as their shallow observations and their wishful thinking. And then he goes point by point to deconstruct their thesis. But at the same time, I think they, like you said, I think they're both missing the point here. I think, you know, they are not seeing that actually, you know, yes, there's a lot of frivolity and shallowness and on Facebook. But at the same time, I'm on Facebook and I see a lot of political activity. And,
yes.
and I think maybe the right wasn't Obama. You know, I always say, you know, Obama was one of the greatest things that could have happened to the conservative movement as well. And I also and I think it was Obama has brought the conservatives into to social media. He spotlighted it in this and the conservatives have really jumped on this bandwagon. And this is something that Winograd and Hayes, they kind of are like they're taking the assumption that all the millennials are against morality and religion, and even though there's all kinds of pro-life groups on Facebook and Christian groups on Facebook, they're ignoring those females. So it can
exactly. I see my 15, 16 year old niece. I think she's 16 now. Maybe she's 15. I don't know. I remember when she was just born. Anyway, makes me seem old. I almost feel old. But I'll see her things on Facebook, and she'll be talking about morality with her high school friends, and they'll be debating it. They'll be taking opposite sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that's where this is a great article for discussion because, you know, they have left out an aspect, but they bring it to light. They bring this topic for us to discuss. But at the same time, you and I both agree that, for, you know, this we're not arguing this.
No, we're not. Not this week. We're not arguing.
We're not arguing this week. You know, that social media is going to be a fabulous tool for politics. This new, you know, unicorns and rainbows that they want to see, Winograd and Hayes believe it's going to bring about. But at the same time, you know, Mr. Weissman is missing the fact that, hey, you know what? This is a fabulous tool to use for communication about politics. And I think personally that a lot more people are able to learn about politics through social media where they didn't before, you know, where it wasn't as accessible. All they had was the mainstream media to educate them. And now they are looking to, like Winograd and Hayes, you know, says their peers. They do. That is one thing they were correct about. They do look at, see, okay, what do their conservative friends have to say? So I think it's going to be a tool used for both sides. And
And here's the thing is that they both miss the point here, at least with Facebook and with Twitter, is that, I mean, we're able to identify and diversify the people we communicate with. We could put a people of, we could separate our, you know, friends, quote unquote friends on Facebook into Democrats, conservatives, liberals, Republicans, you know, Presbyterians, Catholics. You know, we can separate them into groups, and, you know, and we could do the same thing in Twitter. We put, you know, I have separate lists for Indiana, you know, politicos, national politicos, people who are elected, the media. You know, it's, I have a way to separate things, to separate the what different people are saying in different parts of the United States, mm-hmm. and what, I mean, frankly. My Twitter is pretty much completely political.
Okay, so how did you categorize me there, Josh?
You are Indiana political.
Okay.
You are Indiana political. I know that you pretty much talk about national stuff, but because you're based in Indiana, that makes you Indiana political. It also depends on what region of the country you're from. I mean, if you focus mostly on national stuff, but you're from the Hoosier State, you're going to be classified as Indiana political.
Well, I'm thankful that you didn't put me in with the loons and the conspiracists.
I have that list private, Christy, so you might be there, you don't know. No, you're not. But I mean, that's the thing, is that, yes, I get a lot of my political information from Twitter, from the internet, just in general. You know, mm-hmm. More and more people, you know, whether they be millennials or just, you know, people our age, because clearly we don't qualify as millennials.
No, we don't. I guess we're generation. What is it that they call us? Disaffected Generation X.
I think you're Gen. He completely overlooked my generation because mine is Generation Y. Why not?
I can't believe we're in a different generation.
Just by a couple of years. I am just a year shy, I think, of Gen X.
Okay.
And I remember in the 90s, I was disappointed that I wasn't part of Gen X because Gen X was credited for the grunge movement. And I loved bands like Nirvana, you know, Pearl Jam, Smashing Pumpkins. And I was like, I want to be a part of that, even though I don't dress like that, think like that, do like that. I love the music.
Right.
You know, Gen X has the music. And Gen Y, well, we have Hootie and the Blowfish. Thank you very much, people. This is what we've given you. The thing is that more and more people these days are getting their information from the internet. Social media, whether it is, I mean, here's the thing. I said in my monologue, or before the show tonight, or before our segment tonight, I basically said that Gillespie, and in a greater extent, FTR does not exist without social media.
Correct. It is an offshoot of social media. It's a part of our listeners are probably those who participate in social media. And I'll tell you what, if you want to get a finger on the pulse of what is happening, you go to Twitter.
Yeah.
And they're going to be way ahead of all the news stations.
Yes, exactly. You go to Twitter for breaking news. When the unfortunate, you know, tragedy happened in Tucson, Arizona, where Congresswoman Gifford gets shot, I found about it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw tweets coming in. I saw stuff coming in from Twitter and information coming in from Twitter before I saw it coming in from any other news source. And what's funny is that these other news sources that are typically the places to go to, they release things onto Twitter first because they know that more people are getting their information there. And they know it's going to spread like wildfire.
That's right. And, you know, and you'll see all the commercials now. Everyone, every organization, anybody, if you want to be competitive in the market, you have a Facebook fan page and you have a Twitter account.
Absolutely.
And they all have that now. Social media is here. And
It's going to stay, and it is going to shape political discourse. I don't think, as the authors of this study portend, that it is going to turn red and blue states into lovely shades of polka dots and rainbows. we're not gonna be happy-go-lucky. If anything, the one thing that probably social media does is that it probably isolates us into groups, because we're already categorizing ourselves.
Absolutely, that's a very excellent point, Josh.
And it boggles my mind that these people actually completely overlooked that.
Well, I think, you know what happens, you know, they're a little myopic, and they aren't even looking out to see what else is out there. And, you know, this article was shortly after the election. So they have not seen, there had maybe perhaps not have been the growth of the conservative movement that we have now. You know, the Tea Party was just being birthed, and like I said, Obama has been the greatest thing for conservatism. I hate to think, you know, and I know people might shoot me, but I hate to think of what would have happened if McCain would have been elected. I absolutely campaigned for him, and I voted. My vote for McCain was against Obama, and anything else would have been irresponsible. But at the same time, he is very much a rhino.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And that's just where the party was going, and we weren't going anywhere. And I think after the Bush years, the conservative movement needed a shot in the arm. They needed a splash of cold water on their face, and that is exactly what Obama has given us.
Absolutely. Well, I would say that the miracle of, if we want to call it that, of the Obama experience. And I'm talking about his campaign as well, is the amount of people that he has brought into the electorate. And that, you know, he brought in, you know, millions of new voters in 2008.
Yes, he did.
He brought in millions of new Democratic voters in 2008.
And even more conservative voters for 2012!
Exactly! Is that, you know, for all that we people will say about Barack Obama, is that he's been able to bring more people to vote, whether it was for him or against him, than probably any other president.
And the season was ripe. I mean, with the advent of social media and Barack Obama, what we have now is a colossal conservative movement for 2012. We have people who were never involved before are now involved. Because, and I'll tell you what, social media, they have looked to that. They have moved to the internet where they weren't before because they're scared. They're fed up. They're like, what has happened to my country? What is going on? And now they're finding out. That's where they're going to social media, Twitter, Facebook, and they're able to access the articles that they would have never seen before.
Absolutely.
So, because they're sick of, they now realize what the MSM has been feeding them. And it's not much. It's a pretty dry diet.
Okay, well, we've come to the end of this segment, Christy, but before I let you go, did you watch the Super Bowl last night?
Yes.
Okay. Regardless of the outcome, what was your favorite Super Bowl commercial?
Oh, let's see. Let me think. My favorite commercial, probably the Doritos commercial.
Which one?
Was it the dog going through the door? Because I, you know, I've got two little dogs, and she's like, "Don't hurt my doggy," and the little doggy, you know, and he's chasing the dog through the window. You know,
I'm a sucker for Star Wars, so the little kid who thought he was Darth Vader and had the Force.
And I love that one. I saw that before this. That was out before, and so that wasn't new. I saw it before, and I love that because little boys are awesome.
I saw the clip of the kid. He was interviewed on the Today Show this morning, and he's only six. And he bears a striking resemblance to Mark Hamill, so he was a good choice. And but it made me think, I was like, that could have been my boy. Even though my boy's only, you know, almost four years old, but still.
Oh, mine's 13.
Anyway, no, I got some time. I got to enjoy his youth. You're heading into the teens. Good luck.
Yes.
All
you
that.
Know, he's a great boy. He loves his mother.
Ah,
he takes good
that's,
care of me.
That's I'm, the secret.
Yeah, yeah. I've been training him since day one.
Well, all right. Thank you, Chrissy. Thank you for being a part this week. We're going to come right back here on Gillespie. Coming up next, as I mentioned, our pre-CPAC, Ask a Rhino. Is it really RhinoPAC or is it still really CPAC? We'll find out coming up next. Stick around here on Gillespie on FTRradio.com.
FTR Radio is now 100% Michael Jackson free. Can they say the same at the New York Times? I think not. FTR Radio, always online at FTRradio.com.
Hey, fellow conservatives. When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco whatever in the wacko latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. At HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time again for the wave that's taken the nation by storm, where I put so-called Republicans on the spot. Are they real GOPers or just Republicans in name only? It's time for Ask a Rhino!
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Ask a Rhino returns this week with names you are familiar with, Dina Fraioli, John Brodigan, and a newcomer because Mark Warner is too lazy to pick up his gosh darn phone, Nick Barbconnect, from a young, impressionable student from Northeast Indiana who is only here to be corrupted by these rhinos. Nick, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here, Josh. I'm from Northwest Indiana. I'm from the region, liberal Chicagoland.
Oh, you're a region rat. Okay.
Whatever that means.
And, of course, my thanks to John and Dina for being on the show yet again. Anyway.
You're welcome.
I wanted to talk to you guys. Thank you for the belated you're welcome, John. I wanted to talk to you guys, and I love to get Nick's impression. This is going to be his first CPAC. This is going to be my first CPAC.
It's my second CPAC.
Dang it. Nick, go with the flow of the show, all right?
Seventh CPAC, so screw you guys.
Oh, am I the only one who this is going to be their first CPAC?
Yes.
It's number two for me.
Oh, wow. I really am going to be the newcomer. Okay. So anyway, Nick, I'm going to put you on the spot since you're new to the show.
Okay.
How come so-called conservatives are bailing on CPAC this year? Is it really, instead of CPAC, is it RhinoPAC?
I really don't understand why everyone's shocked that everyone's bailing. It's always been RhinoPAC. It's a libertarian haven. It's not really a social conservative party. It's just a fiscal conservative party. I've never seen it as a social conservative haven. So I don't know what all the shock is about.
Well, Dina, this is your seventh, as you willingly let us know, is this the case? I mean, yeah, we've seen Ron Paul win straw polls, but every year they've asked for the last 4 years, I should say, they've asked Sarah Palin to attend. She has declined each time. I know she's not going, but she did come out in support of GoProud being there, which is the reason why the Family Research Council and a couple of other groups are not participating.
Yeah, that's why the John Birch Society, you've got Heritage that people forget are actually boycotting this thing too, and other groups that just feel like this is, you know, it doesn't fit in with their social conservative values, which is okay. I mean, they don't have to go. It's fine. But, you know, if we're trying to be a united party, I think it's a little silly that they don't show up to something that, you know, a large audience of their people are attending.
But, I mean, noted speakers. I mean, Mike Pence was a noted speaker last year. They've had conservatives, social conservatives.
Yeah, they've had social conservatives attend before in the past. But I don't know. They've got the little panties in a bunch over this whole thing, over this whole GoProud thing.
Oh, yeah, GoProud seems to be the big thing. Now, I've also heard, now, I don't know if this is confirmed. Nick or John may be able to answer this, since they seem to be the biggest Mitchies I know. John, especially, out-of-state Mitch Daniels fan.
Holla.
Tell me, I've heard this, that there are groups who are protesting CPAC because Mitch Daniels is going to be there.
I think there was one. I remember reading a blog post where, I mean, now mind you, out of the three like big social conservative organizations who are boycotting just because they don't like the gays,
yeah,
the only one who's relevant is the Tony. I can't think of the name offhand. Tony Perkins organization.
Yeah, the Family Research Council.
Yeah, out of the three of them, Family Research Council. That's the only relevant one out of the three. The organization that was going to boycott Mitch Daniels because he called for the quote-unquote social truce, I honestly think was a guy who set up a blog just so he can get in on some of the old boycott action.
Ah, so he just didn't want to be left out.
Yes, it was like Bob's bigboy/socialconservative.com. It was an organization I had never read before. But it also gets down to how ridiculous some people can be, to where, and I'm sure you and Nick can attest to this, since you're actually living in Indiana, and Dina and I can only wish.
You really could only wish to live in Indiana. I want you both to know that.
It's a dream.
Yeah.
Yes, Nick and I are living the dream.
People go on vacation to come to Indiana to live in a state as prosperous as ours.
I stayed in a Motel 6 in Indiana once. It was lovely and charming.
Free words, the Wild Beaver Saloon.
That's right. We have all of those. All right. We do.
But
have
I mean, the thing is, I mean, yeah. As you guys in Indiana know, as far as like actual social conservative credentials goes, like voting on laws, passing laws, and as far as what's in his heart and mind, Mitch Daniels' social conservative credentials are untouchable.
Actually, Mitch Daniels has incredible social conservative credentials. I mean, Indiana ranks 11th in the most pro-life laws.
I read that in some blog post the other day. That's,
I think that you did. Oh. It's incredible. I think you might have found it, say, at HoosierAccess.com. I can't remember.
Or JoshGillespie.net.
Or JoshGillespie.net.
Or JohnBrodinger.com for the Monday Mitch. It could have been that.
Yes, your Monday morning.
While we're plugging ourselves.
Yes,
but he was basically. They're going to boycott. All he said was that maybe for all of 2 years, let's stop arguing over any social issue, the stuff that divides us, including the more liberal Republicans who just basically don't like Christians. That's where they complain about it. And let's focus on the economy for 2 years, all of 2 years. I don't care how social of a conservative you are. We're not going to overturn abortion in 2 years. We're not going to be able to. They're not going to they're not going to legalize gay marriage in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, John, since you are a birthright rhino.
Yes.
Does Mitch's truce qualify him for true rhino status, or does the fact that he worked for Senator Richard Lugar qualify him for honorary rhino status?
Because
he also worked for Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush, which would seem to disqualify his
count.
Rhino status.
That doesn't count. I mean, but basically, all that matters is what you did in the past week. So the fact that he called for a truce.
But the thing is that he only mentions this thing once. He mentions it in the Weekly Standard, and then it seems like all the social conservatives, all they can do to not bring it up. Because, I mean, he's on Laura Ingraham. She brings it up. You know, any time Mitch Daniels' name is uttered around a social conservative, they automatically bring up the truce. And it seems to be that they're the ones who keep on bringing it up and rehashing this thing over and over again, when Mitch Daniels has the social conservative credentials that one would require if you are a social conservative in your presidential candidate.
Well, I mean, but I mean, that's usually the way it happens. I mean, it's the same thing with when it comes to Sarah Palin with the mainstream media. You know, she says the words death panels once. Oh, they repeat it hundreds and hundreds of times.
Yes, but that's because the mainstream media is evil and hates Republicans, especially Sarah Palin. We all know this, John. Come on, get on message.
But also, the lame media, John. But so are social conservatives.
Wait a minute. Are you willing? Are you daring to lump social conservatives and the way that they report the news to that of the lamestream media, John?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Rhino. You have been caught. I have put you in my Sarah Palin sponsored sites, and there is a target on you. You Rhino.
Dude, you got to get with the new tone. You're not allowed to say stuff like target or sites or Palin.
Too soon.
Target or sites or Palin. Okay. I knew Target and sites were part of it. I did not know Palin was part of New Tone. Excuse me. Allow me to change my language.
I would prefer if the name Palin were never brought up, especially in discussion for presidential candidates.
Oh, Nick, you're starting to enter into the realm of rhinos.
No. I think that makes me sane person. I think that's what qualifies me.
Well, actually, Nick, you kind of knew what this. I mean, you know, Dean and I are a little bit more seasoned. Sanity equals Rhino.
Brodigan speaks truth in this segment.
Yes.
Now,
sanity equals Rhino. Reality equals Rhino. Rational equals Rhino.
Wanting to win equals Rhino.
Yes. Coherent. What's coherent?
That's Rhino.
Okay, basically anything other than Palin, Beckman, or talk radio equals Rhino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rush Limbaugh?
Rhino.
Oh, no, yeah, if you're Rush Limbaugh, then you're like the truest of true conservatives.
Okay.
You're a true conservative.
Well, now,
I'm a liberty-minded person.
Yes. Well, I mean, now, you know, if you're down with Rush Limbaugh, you ain't bad, you ain't nothing.
Well... Now, guys, I happen to see, despite all the hand-wringing from social conservatives about CPAC and its apparent Rhino leanings, I did see that there was a panel on traditional marriage in society. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if this was a true – if this was Rhino Pack, traditional marriage wouldn't even be discussed. Now, unless it was being led by GoProud and they're just talking about the evils of traditional marriage. I mean, is that what's going on here?
Actually, Josh, we forgot one. Details equal Rhino.
Oh! Way to bring the conversation back, John.
The focus on the family organization, they were there last year, too, and as far as I know, I think they're still going this year, unless someone wants to correct me. Yeah.
Did Dr. Dobson not get the memo?
Well, you know, what I don't understand is if they're boycotting this because they feel sort of marginalized, or they feel like there's not a lot of – they're not being represented properly at CPAC, wouldn't you think they'd want to come and be like, yeah, I'm here to represent social issues. Let's talk about it.
Now, see, the way that you delivered that, isn't that...
You're a gangster from...
is that a social conservative from GoProud? That's what I want to know.
I think that would be like
a social... It's all about delivery. I'm sorry. Yeah. Was that... That wasn't New Tone.
That was Dina Speak. There you go.
Okay, Dina Speak. All right, sorry.
Deliverance.
I thought I heard Going Banjos as the opener music.
Okay. Well, here's a question. Just to kind of bring it back to CPAC in general here. Since this is my first, I'm a newbie. Presumably, there will be some people listening to this who have never been to CPAC yet have pined, like I have, for years to attend, hoping that the one time they go that Ron Paul does not win the straw poll. What should we be expecting here in D.C. in the next next couple of days?
Apparently
a kick line of about three Hoosiers in Jets jerseys singing Sinatra.
Josh, I had the YRNF set up happy hour around the block from our hotel.
I noticed that. Thank you, John. So at least there's not too far to walk.
No.
Just stumble.
And what can only be considered the Colts fans' walk of shame. after they do a kick line at Jets units.
I know we got Blogger Bash on Thursday where it's no shirt, no shoes, no problem. Ooh, and actually, the big event of CPAC, and Dean is actually on the host committee of this.
Oh?
Yes. RhinoCon presents John Brodigan.
Yes! That's Wednesday night. That's the night before CPAC.
That's a selective committee, it sounds like.
It is. Yeah. It's me, basically. And apparently, people like me enough where they come to my parties, so there you go.
Well, and especially if they're of legal age, Nick.
I did invite Brandon Kaiser as well, who's not of legal age, but it's a restaurant, so you're allowed to enter.
That's true. Nick, when are you and your underage buddies arriving?
Thursday morning, like 3 a.m.
Say what?
Oh, Jesus. I'll just be getting home at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I see, the last time I was at T-Coast, I actually shut it down with Rhinos in Name Only, Sean Hackbarth. And let's see, there was Dina was there, Miterbox, and Always on Offense was present. We all shut down. T-Coast, that was fun.
I love the fact that we have to call these people by their Twitter handles. Thank God I use my last name.
Thank God I'm just me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here I'm. I like to protect the identity of those who you choose to go under a pseudonym.
Exactly.
Well, no, especially Mitrobox, because he doesn't even actually use an actual avatar unless the cat actually like was sitting with you.
Yeah. No, the cat does not look like him. He looks a lot different.
Because I mean, quite frankly, if you guys are having dinner with a talking cat, that is awesome.
Well, I'd be allergic because I'm allergic to cats. I couldn't hang around them.
Me too. I'm totally allergic to cats.
Girl.
For reals. So will there be any conservatives there this week at all? I mean, true conservatives.
And I mean
true conservative in the way that Kevin Eater would define a true conservative.
How does Kevin Eater's definition run?
Gosh. Well, this was an interesting conversation. The last time I was actually also in Dina's presence, this was a conversation between Always on Offense and Kevin over who is the truer conservative. Kevin, as some of my listeners may know, he works for correct me if I'm wrong here. He works for Newsmax, correct? No. Yeah. Newsmax.
He works for the Media Research Center.
Media Research Center. Yes. And anyway, it's a concern.
And it's Newsbusters. Newsmax is a separate organization.
That's right, Newsbusters. Okay, so he works for Media Research Center. And Always on Offense happens to work for a member of Congress, and so they started comparing who is the true conservative of the two. Who is the real rhino, actually? Was it Always on Offense, or was it Kevin? And Kevin won out as a true conservative because his boss happened to sign on to a letter declaring war on anybody who dared to challenge Jim DeMint or criticize Jim DeMint.
I remember that night.
Yes.
I was there for that.
Yes, that was a fun evening. And so Kevin won out as the true conservative because his boss happened to align with those who would threaten to ruin the careers of those who spake evil against the dear leader from the state of South Carolina.
Okay. Well, I mean, if I were to think of the holy trinity of real conservatives at CPAC,
yes,
I'd probably go with Mitt Romney.
Oh.
Chris,
Chris Barron, the chair of GoPro that's causing all these problems.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And Lynn Crow, the state chair of the New York City Young Republicans. I believe those are the three real conservatives at CPAC this year.
Yeah, if you mean by, you know, rhino.
Can we never put conservative and Romney in the same sentence? Can we agree as a society that's wrong?
Nope.
Wait a minute. You're a Daniels backer. Yes, conservative and Romney in the same sentence should be banished from the English language.
I mean, Mike Huckabee, he's the real conservative.
Oh, no, he is not.
He's not a fiscal conservative.
He is not a fiscal conservative. The guy will pardon anybody he feels, you know, and they'll go off on a killing spree.
Yeah.
And raise taxes on anything.
He's the Michael Dukakis of Arkansas.
Tim Pawlenty, he's a real conservative.
He's a meh conservative. What's supposed to excite us about Tim Pawlenty?
Actually,
the fact that we can call him President T-Paw.
Yeah, that he's got a gangster name.
I think that's pretty BA.
I think Josh just stumbled upon the fourth leg of the conservative stool. The social conservatives, the fiscal conservatives, the national security conservatives, and the meh conservatives.
Tim Pawlenty's right up there in terms of meh. You know, when his name was being thrown out as a potential VP choice in 2008, I was like, eh. Tim Pawlenty, all right. I was more excited about the possibility of Eric Cantor, and yes, I will admit, Sarah Palin.
Yeah. Oh, no, I honestly was a big fan of Sarah Palin up until Election Day 2008. Anything that happened prior to 2008 that was entirely on the shoulders of the mind-numbing incompetence of the McCain campaign.
Oh.
It was, yeah.
Speak it, brother. Speak it.
Yeah. It was after election night where you had Sarah Palin, like, you know, taking off on her own, that's when the wheels started to come off.
Oh, and did they? They flew right off that automobile. Oh, my goodness. If that is an 18-wheeler, and I can only assume that it is because Sarah Palin's down home America, there are only a few wheels left on that big rig.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
her campaign is a hummingbird with Tourette. You never know what's going to come out about it next. But you always know it's going to be something ridiculous you'll hear on the news for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to say like 60 to 65% of Sarah Palin's problems was just the seething hatred of the media. But like the 35% that she was responsible for was so spectacular of a ball dropping.
Well, okay, there's a difference there. There's think about the what camp she was in. She was in the McCain camp, and there were people from every different campaign in there, and it was just a question of being mismanaged. She was mishandled, and there shouldn't have been messages like that.
She was. Dina's right on this. She was.
No. I'm talking about after the election. Anything prior to Election Day 2008, that is 100% the utter incompetence of the McCain campaign.
Absolutely, but even afterwards, she put herself around people that she just... She doesn't know who to put around her to help her out. And she whatever's here in her tongue, she just spits right out without thinking.
Well, yeah, exactly. She's an idiot. I mean, you know, we come to grips with that.
As my mom would say, Dina, think before you speak. No one wants to hear you talk when you don't think. That's what she should do.
No one wants to hear Dina talk.
Oh, my God. Dina's New York was showing.
Hold on. I'm getting beclemped. We need to talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. You can't tell it from the podcast, but Nina just whipped out her New York.
Yes, she did. And on that note, we've actually had, unfortunately, this has been a stellar Ask a Rhino segment, and thank you, Nick, for being a newbie to the show, and the veterans, Dina Fraioli and John Brodigan, but I got to cut you guys off because we've bumped up against the clock. Anyway... Thank you guys for being on the show this week. We've come to the end of the show as well, so I hope that people stick around, listen to Michael Fidenza, the Armchair Energist, and tonight, if you guys want to stay up this late, the Jenny Erickson Show returns to FTR.
I will totally stay up for Jenny Erickson.
It's at 2 a.m., though.
It's okay. I stay up for Jenny Erickson regularly as it is.
Awesome. All right, thank you, everybody, for listening to FTRradio.com. Thank you and have a good evening. We'll be having a CPAC wrap-up next week. Let's tune in. Thanks. See you next week.